Like recently, there was a lot of noise about the financials, the reports, like auditing, all that. Are things that bad as people talk about? Or like, what's the scene? Like, why is there so much noise? First is you're talking about the audit delay. Everybody's talking about, hey, why there was a delay? Is there something going on? Why was Akash not paid? Or I don't know, like 10,000 things which people are talking about, but everything's related to that. So what's the scene? Like, a lot of people say that you were not capitalized. You had such a large burn rate because of your acquisitions and stuff. Now you need a lot of funds and you're not being able to raise. And that's why you self-funded it.
For us, those who are closest to the action, for us and investors, these are two big positives. But it gets represented as negatives in the media. It's the same thing which has been playing out. That's the nature of the media. That's the nature of social media. Like, nothing is as good as what you read. So it's like, I can't complain. It's the same media talks all the good things, right? So it's the rags to riches story. They only celebrate.
Yeah.
So nothing is as good as what media writes. And nothing is as bad as... It's something in the middle.
From having his name on the Indian jersey to now becoming the official sponsor for FIFA in the world. This journey has been amazing. This is not only a motivational episode where you actually learn about a journey from zero to now being the best in the world, but is also filled with so many lessons about education, about entrepreneurship, about building the right team, about how to talk to people so that you and the people together build the most valuable thing in the world. Byju's is the most valuable startup in the country. But there are so many rumors about it. There are so many controversies about it. Everybody's been talking about it. So we thought, why not we ask the man himself, Byju Ravindran, about what's going on? Are these rumors true? Are they false? Are these controversies, do they make sense? Or they're just false accusations? Forget all of this. How this man actually started from a small village to now go on to build the biggest startup in the world. And there are so many investors around the world and himself that still believe in the potential of the startup. And after this conversation, I'm sure you'll have a very different perspective as well. So make sure that you watch this episode till the end. Also, everybody asks me about Raj. How do you reach out to these people? These are such big entrepreneurs around the world. How do you get them to speak to you? There are so many things which I've done in my life to build this social capital. And I've written about all of them. All the strategies, tricks and tips which I used to get to talk to these people. And all the things which I've learned from them about building a startup, about building a profitable company, about investing, about making money. Har cheez ke baare mein, jo maine seekha hai. I've written about all of these things in my new book called Build Don't Talk, which is available for pre-order right now. The link is in the description as of now. Please go order right now because we have only limited number of books which won't be available later on. So make sure that you check out the book right now, and I've written about every little thing which I've used to go from zero to the position where I have reached today.
So there was a time where, like, for many years, like almost 3 years, I didn't take a single day break. And this includes not just taking classes and in large auditoriums and in some cases stadiums, but traveling every day and covering 9 cities every week. And that I did that for years. There was no question of you not feeling well and not taking a class, because from a student's point of view, they were getting only one class per week.
Hmm.
So I didn't take a single break for like almost 3 years at a stretch.
So it's like small classroom
there is no shortcut to success.
No, and of course,
perception is also created by media, right? Because people think that being in the billionaire list and rich, like, nothing has changed for me, because I make sure that people who have been with me, they don't change, because for them, like for my cousin who's here, I am still the same guy who played cricket with him. So they don't care whether I'm a billionaire or an entrepreneur. Right? And it's the same thing. So that's why I don't change people around me.
Hmm.
Like, even if they want to leave, I make sure that they don't leave. So whether it's my driver who's been there for 18 years or people who are at home. And so
everyone, like, and people around you.
I've always stayed in a house of 18, 20 people. For them, I am Byju the cricketer, not Byju the entrepreneur.
You said you played 3 games for the university level. Which were the 3 games?
Football, table tennis and cricket.
University level.
Yeah, all three.
Which one do you still love the most?
Like with games, it's very difficult for me to pick. It's like if I see a tea table, I'll right now play that. If I get 11 people to play, I'll play football or cricket. If I have time, I'll play cricket. If it's only short time, then I'll play football. So it's not like very much into love with all three. Football is where I got maximum number of injuries. I've gone through like many surgeries because of football, but I still close to me because that's the out of everything else, that's the real team game, right? It's like as an individual, you can do up to a certain amount, but it's all about that's out of the three, that's where you need to play as a team the most.
Yeah, that's in fact one of the more toughest as well because of the coordination of because you're like 11 minds trying to play at the same time.
Yeah,
it's a different ball game altogether. But so funny question, did your parents never tell you that padle, like, you know, you should study and not play sports? What was it like? Like, did your parents support sports or studies? What
yes,
was
my they, it's my parents have always given me, I'm an entrepreneur because of them, because how do you become an entrepreneur from that kind of a background, coming from a small village, from a very lower middle class background, where it's whatever I am, I'll attribute to the kind of freedom and the blind trust which they have. When someone is trusting you this much, you normally won't exploit that freedom. And that's, so my parents have given me the freedom, though both of them were teachers, now both retired. The kind of freedom which they have given to an extent where they never used to look at my report card. Maybe you can say I never gave them a chance to look at that. So never in my life, they've told me, do this, do that. Like even after being teachers, they have given me the freedom to bunk like 60-70% of my classes. I used to spend most of my time outside, not wasting time. I was playing games and very seriously and having fun. But that freedom is the reason why I was able to pursue everything which I loved, whether it's, and you create entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurship is not a skill, it's a mindset. How do you get into that mindset? That is, I was privileged to have parents who gave me that level of that kind of freedom. And that's what I try replicating with people who work with me as colleagues. I give them the freedom and hope that they don't exploit that. So that's the thing. You blindly trust someone, you give them the freedom. Normally, you like 9 out of 10 people won't exploit that. If someone is trusting you blindly, you normally won't exploit the freedom.
Yeah.
That's applicable as a leader. That's applicable as a parent. So I'm trying to be, if I can be half as good as my dad, I'm sure I'll be a good father.
Okay,
it's a fine balance between what you think as monitoring and mentoring. So, but if you can go more towards mentoring and guidance and rather than monitoring, then
go deeper on this. Go deeper on it. Monitoring and mentoring.
The difference between like what good teachers do and what good leaders do is they, it's a thin line between what you think of as mentoring and monitoring, right? Monitoring and continuously kind of making sure that how do you make sure that you give them the freedom, or like the better word to use here will be what you think as interference and support. If you can be in a role where you support but not interfering, and they will come to you when they need support. That's how this is applicable not just as a leader, but it's like as a parent, as a leader, as a friend. Like if you can play that right role of supporting and not interfering, It works well. It works well with people. It works well with companies you acquire. It works well with your kids. If you start interfering too much, then you are not giving them the freedom and you are not helping them achieve their actual potential.
That's so nice. So you mean to say, like, correct me if I'm wrong, that monitoring and mentoring, there's a very thin line between them. So monitoring is when you tell people to be in certain lines and you guide them to, okay, this is the line, this is what you need to follow. And mentoring is when you're facilitating them to make sure that they make their own lines and they do go beyond those.
That's what good teachers do. Good teachers, they play the role of a mentor and not necessarily a teacher, right? They teach them how to learn and not rather than spoon feeding. That's a difference when it comes to in the context of teaching and learning. Good teachers, they make sure that they facilitate learning they make sure that students learn how to learn instead of spoon feeding. Now, unfortunately, most of the students our education system is in such a way that it's learning driven by fear of exams and not love for learning. is to teach math in stadiums. Like, yeah. it's difficult to believe, but if you like, you should take a look at some of those videos.
We're going
to
put out like, these videos while you're like talking about it.
25,000 students, like, simultaneously. You can't teach math if you are teaching math in a stadium. You have to do a math concert. So, and it's again, it's similar to, like, what I mean by math concert is, you have to make it engaging to an extent where you can hold on to their attention and then teach in the process. Mm. So it's not a math class. You need to do a math concert. That's how I think of it. You, like when, and now if you, if, and as a teacher, if you are not able to make them understand, you lose them.
Yeah.
Now to make them understand, you need to make it engaging. Now, whether it's by storytelling or like younger kids, you need to kind of put a rap, like you need to give a story, and through that story, you need to teach them. Maybe older kids, you just need to give them the context on why they learn what they learn, yeah. right? That context can be, make them, make it relatable to something which they like, whether it can be cricket, it can be. So, and it's at the end of the day, it's all about using common sense. So it's like, yeah, and which is unfortunately not so common. So it's figuring yeah. out, and that's a good thing of being a teacher. So, and
I want to know you. Okay, let's start your journey. Like when, how all of this, like tell me about your childhood. Like what do you remember from your childhood? Where were you born? Like which village, which city, which state? Where were you born? Like when did it start?
Just to dramatize the story, I say I come from a small village, which is a fact. It's called Arikod. North
Arikod.
Arikod. Okay. It's difficult for non-Keralites to pronounce. Can you try? Arikod.
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 I can't.
So that's
Arikod.
It's a village called Arikod in the Kannur district, which is north of Kerala. And though I dramatize by telling I come from a small village, I don't tell that as a, and I tell this to everyone. It's not to get some sympathy. I feel it's a big advantage. Growing up in a village like that is many advantages. In a village, whatever you have is for everyone. And that you learn, you learn how to trust people blindly, right? You like anything you want, like 100 people will come running for you. That's how there might be just one TV. That's where the whole village will go and watch. That's how I used to watch World Cup. And that's how I got attracted to football. When I was like very young, like six and a half years old, I saw my first World Cup when Maradona helped Argentina win. So but it was like there's one TV where all of us used to go and watch, right? So growing up in a village, the biggest advantage, and the one thing if you ask me is like you learn how to treat all others as equals, which is such a big advantage that... And if you can make sure that success is not getting to your head and you learn that, it's an unfair advantage to you in future, right? Because you learn like that simple thing that no one is inferior, but no one is superior. If you truly believe in that, it's like nothing can stop you. It's like when I go and meet, let's say, Mark Zuckerberg. If I go into that meeting, think that I have only 15 minutes and meeting one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world, I'll put myself under so much pressure. If I am giving, if I can find that balance that everyone, all are equals, like so different people are privileged to have create different level of impact. And then that 15 minutes is like any other 15 minutes, which I'll give the same importance when I'm meeting an intern who must have joined, let's say a week before, right? This is not an easy, this has to come from within.
Yeah, it's not easy.
You can't do this artificially.
Yeah.
So that is something which, again, it's not nothing to do with me, right? I am not special. I learned this because I grew up in an environment where that's maybe the one, like there are a few good things about growing up in a village like that. This is one of them. Learning how to treat all others equally.
And it's so difficult.
It's not easy. It's like where like, and I, for me, it's like you will never hear from me that I give some, like for me, all are equals.
It's so good because, you know, what I've noticed now, the world is changing and people have learned that nobody's inferior. So everybody treats everybody equally.
Yeah.
But they've still not figured out a way how to make sure that no one's superior. Like we put ourselves pressure by treating people. We make us gods in our head and we all like put ourselves in such pressure that, oh my God, what I'm going to say? Oh my God, what I'm going to say?
Yeah.
And it just blows up.
I wish everyone like follows, even if you think that no one is inferior, that's good enough. That's the most important quality, right? That's like the moment you think that no one is inferior, then you'll start that's where empathy starts, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. I feel, so I think this also comes from parenting because I think in my family, what I've learned, and my parents, like my dad, like he donates a lot, does a lot of charity. He's always in treating people right. And he always showed us that, you know, you need to make sure that you are helping everyone, because somebody helped your dad. That's why he's here and you are here.
Yes.
So, or else you would have been no one. So if somebody has made you who you are today, it's your responsibility to make everyone who they are today. Like, you need to do something. So I think that runs in the family also, and you start from beginning. And then as you grow, obviously your perspective changes. So that's what I learned my family. So go ahead about your village. So you were born there, you learned this.
Yeah, and there are so many other aspects which you learn when you grow up in such an unstructured environment. It's like, so when I started playing games, as a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, I was not just playing with a 6-year-old in a structured environment.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to learn by being in an unstructured environment. Even there is this school of thought that even in school, if you actually put 6-year-olds to 10-year-olds together and make them learn, they learn so much from each other.
Mm.
And that's not what we follow in school. That's not what we follow in our coaching camps, right?
Yeah.
But as a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, if you are playing with a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, you learn life, right? Yes. You learn how to be competitive. You learn how to be... There is nothing given on a platter to you, right?
It's 100%.
So that learning in an unstructured environment and like by playing those multiple games, that's another big advantage which I like remember very well. So in my village, most people will know me as not someone who used to do well in math and studies, but someone who plays cricket and football well. So I used to play from morning till midnight. So when you play different games, you don't have time for anything else.
9 to 12 cricket, 12 to 3 football, then I play another game.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, tell me.
And went to like the nearest school in my village, which is a Malayalam medium school. Mm. And the average English which you hear from me is what I've learned by, again, they're also back to sports. By listening to sports commentary, mainly cricket commentary on radio. So I used to speak very fast, because in radio commentary, the difference is that they have to kind of relive the action, right? So they speak fast. Like if you've heard football commentary on radio. So I used to think that, okay, English is, you are supposed to speak fast. So, and now I have conditioned myself to kind of speak still like slower than before. And I improved on that by using math, by teaching math. So I learned by listening to sports commentary and improved on English by teaching math.
Okay. I was researching about you. I got like a lot of reading material. I found out that you go on extremes. And when it comes specifically with your sports and everything, right? So you underwent a surgery and you were advised not to walk or run or play the sport for next 3 weeks, right? Or 3 months. What was it?
It's different. Like, I've gone through so many surgeries. I'm not going to figure out which one, but I'm someone who...
But like, I'm talking about a time when you started walking the next day. You were advised not to walk for 3 weeks or 3 days.
There's also two, again, there are like in all these rehab process, there are two schools of thought. I am someone who follows that. It's like, yeah, like generally if you go to like after an ACL reconstruction, which is a very complex surgery, they'll say that you relax. But there's other extreme that if you kind of can push yourself, and if you're someone who can take that pain and push yourself, you'll recover faster. So I follow the second school, and it's all pain is in your mind at the end of the day. So, and that has helped me recover. So I normally say that not many people, because I've gone through these surgeries so many times, one leg two times, the other one reconstruction. These are like normally professional athletes will go through like these many times. So, when I see, just to give you, to get into my mindset, is like when I fall injured, I know that it's broken, because I've gone through this multiple times. I know it's already gone. The first thing which I don't get depressed with that, right? Because if like 50% is in your mind, if you have that mindset that you can take the pain and I've walked in these surgeries, I walked on the same day. And then I take it as a challenge, because every time I try recovering faster, was just to prove a point that, yeah, it's like you've elevated your level of so these are not extremes, these are things which I like, because I want to play, go back and play. And every time I get injured, I've come back stronger, because it's an opportunity to rehab and recover faster. And
like, let's just pause here for a moment.
I'll just add one more point over there. I normally say that do you know the joy of walking first time walking. No, I'm sure you won't remember. As a one-year-old, when you started walking,
you don't.
You don't know. I know that multiple times. Because every time, second time when you recover, that's a joy, right? First you walk again. You learn to walk. So yeah. I have done that multiple times. That's a positive.
You killed my next question. My next question was this. Like, let's just pause for a second. And I wanted to ask, like, so do you think this mindset, you got it from your parents? Like, or you developed it yourself?
I was never restricted. So I'll say I owe it to them in terms of giving me that freedom to pursue whatever I wanted to. I went to the same school where they were teaching, but they still gave me the freedom, right? Even when other teachers were asking them, what is that he's doing? He's not even attending classes. So that freedom is important. That freedom is if freedom is the most important. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you need to be free.
So. Yeah. Was that one thing, because you said like you owe it to your parents, right? Was that one thing your mom taught you and you feel, or you learned from your mom? Maybe she didn't teach you and you just observed and it which has happened. I'll tell you what it was for me.
Yeah.
So my mom never taught me this, but I've always seen her dealing with fights, with complications, with difficult situations with such ease and empathy that I think it's amazing. So I'm 26. In 26 of my life, I've heard my mom shouting to me just once, and her shout is like, "Yar, ghar kyun nahi aaya?" That's the loudest she goes. Right? I've seen her. She's just always so calm. She makes that everything is sorted. Yeah. And every time she holds us together. So I've learned this thing from her. Like, is there anything you have learned from her?
I think almost everything which we learn is not because they teach, right? We learn by observing, right? Like, that's why it's very important that when, like, if you want your kids to be in a certain way, you need to act that way, right? So they don't learn because you teach them something. They observe and they learn. So it's like, if you would want them to tell, like when people ask him, people ask my son about why are people taking selfies with. So I have heard him answer telling that because he does good things. That's exactly, if I can make sure that he continues telling like that, even 20, 30, 40 years down the line, I'll be happy, right? Because he thinks, I've heard people asking him on what do you feel about seeing your last name as on the Indian jersey? So I was very happy to hear the answer. And he's only eight. I was happy to hear the answer that he didn't give an answer. Like, he was very cool about it. He didn't tell how I'm proud about it and things like that. He thinks that and maybe it's because that's what he observes. He thinks that as much as possible, we help others. And they learn by seeing, right? And that, so I would want to believe that I have learned all these things. Which I want my son to learn is from my parents, and not just parents, right? The advantage of growing up in a village is that there was always there's always a big support system. Always between 18 to 25 people at home. So that support system is important, right? You are on your own, you can't, if somebody thinks that you can do this, so that team is important. Team at home, team at office, it's what defines you. You and entrepreneurs get undue credit for what they do.
Yeah.
But it's all about what the team, maybe I'll say, you can also say sometimes they also get undue flack for what they do. But it's all about the team. Team at home and team. So that support system is important, which I've been fortunate enough.
Is there any specific incident you remember with your mom, which you feel like?
My mom is a math teacher, so though she never taught me math, but one thing which I have, which I feel the happiest about is when, and that's true for both mom and dad, is, and that's where I realized it's such a special thing to teach others that, not many, it might not be the best paying job option as a teacher, but it's one of the most satisfying jobs in the world, right? It's even when old students, so they would have taught 20, 25 years back. When they meet them somewhere, when you go for a walk outside, it's like the eyes lit up. That's priceless. That feeling is, that's what, nothing can beat that as a teacher, right? No amount of money, no amount of fame can beat that. So that's something which I remember. Every time when an old student meets them who would have taught them 20, 25, 30 years back, I have not seen them happier than that. And that's a feeling which is difficult to express. So, and then something which I'm enjoying today, it's like even I might not be meeting all of them, but when I get so many messages from those students whom I would have taught 15, 20 years back, that's priceless. Nothing can beat that.
So that one thing you've observed with your parents.
And maybe, yeah, that's what kind of made me shift from, I normally say I'm an engineer by chance, a teacher by choice, but that choice is like, your choice is based on what you like. It's a subconscious
it's
choice.
Given. Right, most it's of the given. Times, yeah. 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 And I also feel like at every point we all believe that we choose certain things, but it's always given. Yeah. External forces around us has, like, for years, they were designing themselves in a way that it made you choose certain things which you choose in your life.
Yeah.
It is always external.
As people say, you need to be at the right place at the right time.
Well, how's your relationship with your dad?
With dad, it's a very special relationship. It's like something which I told you, right? Like, he has given me so much freedom, and it's something which it's very special. I'm sure it's like that for everyone, but whatever I am is because of him. And it's like, I make it a point to like spend as much time with him, and COVID actually has helped us to like
spend more time
with the family. Like, unlike before, like again, where expectation of travel was less. So that's only a good thing about COVID. Everything else is unfortunate as it's been for the world. But the good part is that everyone, all of us got more time with the family, and it made us realize the, like, what you thought is important is not necessarily important. And like spending time with the family, and like those 2-3 years, it's been like life changing for me. So
it's there. So, okay. Usually every time when you grow up, like kids end up having disagreements with dad, right? Because there are certain things which they believe in, you don't believe in. Is there any specific thing one thing which you always disagreed on, or maybe now you agree on, or like maybe your dad agrees on? Is there anything?
To be very honest, I can't think of anything where I was telling you, right? It's been blind support. It's like, as far as he is concerned, like his son can't go wrong. It's almost like, and this, I was telling, like last few months I've gone through a very tough time. He's just recovered from a cancer surgery last week, like 2 weeks back. So the only reason why I was like, wherever I was traveling, I was going back and staying with him, is because he thinks the same. He thinks that his son can do anything. So, and that is 50% confidence. And he believes that's why, like that, like, because in those, and when you are going through that kind of a treatment, it's very important to be positive.
Yeah.
So that blind trust that his son can do, just to give you when it started, it was actually an advanced stage, but there was not much time. So I just took him to New York, and maybe that's one thing of having access to money, which, and I'm very grateful. Last few months and years have taught me to be more grateful for privileges which I have been able to get. Again, nothing to do with me, but I'll just tell you some. So I just took him into this one of the best hospitals in New York. No reference. I went, and normally it takes 2 weeks appointment. I just went there, sat outside the doctor. Like, you won't believe, that's where the entrepreneurial spirit is always useful. I told them, I'll only go once you treat, once you see, once sat there from morning till evening and got that. So it's that, what do you say? Never taking no for an answer. Yeah. If you badly want something, you will get it. And someone who strongly believe that you badly want it, you will get it.
Were you able to focus on the work when your dad was going through such a hard journey? How do you manage? Because I'm sure, the treatment is hard.
Yes.
And more than the treatment, mentally, it just stops you from something.
I'm someone who's very strong mentally, in terms of, I know how to
manage different things.
I might be getting into this with so much happening behind, but once I get into this, I'm on it. It's 100% into what I do, right? It's that undivided attention in things which you do. So that way, yeah, it's been tough. So there's no, but it's also the other way around, right? I see it as, after the surgery, the first 5 minutes when he met me, whatever he has told me, that's enough to do, that kind of justifies everything which I do.
What did you tell
me? I don't want to distill that, but it's more like that is then. So all these hours which I put and everything is justified, like that, those 5 minutes, those that precious, that like, and that is what, because at the end of the day, like beyond a certain point, money doesn't mean anything, right? It's like, yeah you need some amount of money to like do all those things, but like everything which I do is justified for that. So
everything was worthwhile.
Yeah.
And then
it's not I don't get distracted with the, I can focus once I get in. So I can't do 2-3 things set together, but I'm someone who will like give 100% and get it done. And then till I get it done, I don't stop. So it's like, that's why challenges will come and go, and nothing can beat.
Now talking about games, you were a cricketer in your village, and you said that you got your last name on Indian jersey.
Just to make it very clear, there is this misconception that, okay, I love sports and that's why we do all these things. There's like, see, I love math. I decide based on, people might think I do things based on intuition, but that's, intuition is nothing but math done fast in your mind. So the reason like that, that's very simple. The reason why we did that is like, both cricket and Bollywood are two of the biggest religions in India.
Yeah.
And we have been, by being at the center of both, by being on the jersey and by using Bollywood stars for endorsement, we have been able to create awareness for a segment which is such a neglected sector. Like, you won't find many large edtech companies, but it's such a grossly neglected and underinvested sector. Companies invest billions of dollars in creating entertainment content. I'm not telling entertainment is not important, but education is a lot more integral to anyone and any country. Right?
Yeah.
But the world needs 10 more Baijus, not one. So it's such a neglected sector, because it's one of those few sectors where it needs to be long term. You can't, there is no short term success in education.
Yeah.
Because in entertainment, you get people engage, like people say your competition is sleep, right? You make people watch that content and then you get engagement and you show that engagement is your result. In education, you need to make it engaging. You also need to show outcomes, right?
Yeah.
So, and that takes a lot of time. So, like coming back to the point, so we have, it's important. So we have invested on all these things to make sure that there is awareness for self-learning or for the learning apps. You also need to understand that we are creating this segment in a country obsessed with spoon feeding. And what are we trying to do? We are trying to like make sure that students are taking initiative in learning and learning on their own. And then we have added other formats where there is teacher support, there is hybrid learning, all of that. So it required those initial big branding investments, and that has created the
kind of
brand awareness.
Move.
We are among the top brands in India today in terms of awareness. Yeah. And then kids love the brand. So it's about
100%. So I was just asking, like, how did you feel though?
I'm happy about it, but it should not get your head, right?
So
it's important. The biggest challenge for all entrepreneurs or anyone who's creating an impact is that you need to be humble enough to know that you know only a certain things in any field. The moment someone thinks, oh, I know everything, I am this, the game is over, right? But you also need to, like, one, that's one part. The other part is you also, like, humble enough to know that you, like, there's so much more to learn and so much more to do. But you also need to know that that's the other extreme. You also need to be, like, confident enough or bold enough to know that you can make an impact on others. Now, these are two, if you think of it, these are two extreme things. But how do you find the balance to be in between, right? How do you find the balance to be in between is the key. So,
and that's what you've been trying to do.
Yeah. You need to make sure that success is not getting to anyone's head, right? So, but you still need to be bold enough to think that you can make an impact.
Mm.
But like, these two are two extreme feelings, right? You need to stay on the ground. You need to stay on the ground, humble enough to know that you know only this much. It's like, yeah, you've been lucky enough to, obviously, once you put in that level of hard work, your fortune will always support you. But, It's in the middle.
Do you believe in balance? Apart from this, do you believe in work-life balance?
It's difficult. It's in terms of, for me, both in work and in life, I do things which I love. So I don't have I have not felt the pressure to segregate the two.
That's such a good answer.
That's not an answer.
I've been waiting somebody to say this. So I'm a person who doesn't believe in work-life balance because I feel that work and life both happens when you love it.
Yes.
Right? You know, like when the people around you. So for example, he was like, what do you want in a relationship? Okay. In a relationship, you want to be able to share and you want to be able to listen. Okay.
Yes.
You both want each other to grow. You both want each other to have each other's back and support. Right? Doesn't matter what the conversation is. At the end of the day, these are the foundations. Yes. So when you're like really obsessed with your work and you love a lot, you and your partner end up becoming and talking about the things which you're doing and which she is doing. And then together just becomes like a great partnership which you're helping. So it doesn't feel like that you're trying to dabble between two lives.
Yes.
Right? It just goes, flows, mixes very nicely. And nobody has given me an answer like this. Everybody's like, either some people like there's no work-life balance. Some people are like there's extreme work-life balance. You need to switch off at 5 p.m. You need to switch off at this p.m. And you said very nicely. Like you don't segregate.
It's also, I don't segregate. People segregate this by Monday to Friday and Saturday, mm-hmm. Sunday, things like that, right? Even someone wants to do that, if you want to be more efficient, it's actually better to do it on a hourly basis. It's like, yeah, this 8 to 9 p.m., if you're spending time with your son, then you can, like, you don't need to keep aside 2 days for life and 5 days for work. That's not how it happens. So it's like you can be a lot more efficient and on both sides. If you kind of like this, instead of dividing it into days, this is even for people who want to segregate. You can do it in terms of hours so that you can spend a couple of hours every day with people whom you want to spend time with. But if you're fortunate enough to be in a place where both in work and life, you are doing things which you are truly passionate about.
That's a brilliant place.
That's the best place to be in. Entrepreneurship is a mindset. It's not a skill. So you can't teach, right? But keys and something which can work for everyone is you need to have those big dreams. And I told you that thinking big has always been part of the game. Like it's detractors will tell you that like 10 years back, if someone was talking about a unicorn, they would have told you it cannot happen from like this. But it's always, but important to also like listen to what detractors are telling, because there is always, it's never 100% noise. There is 10-20% feedback in everything what detractors tell. Like if you can pick that, like you can hear everything, but choose what you listen to. And if it's making an impact on others, then if it's also something which makes an impact on others, then it's criminal if you are not following your passion, because that means you are here for a job and you are privileged to make that impact. And because sometimes your passion might not make an impact on others, then it's okay. Then otherwise it's criminal. And then having these big dreams is important, but dreams are only, it's easy to dream, right? For anyone. How do you, like, the goals are more important. Goals are equally important, right? That's 50%. Thinking big is 50%. The other 50% is all about, you need to have a life goal, but that's not enough, right? You need to have an annual goal, monthly goal, weekly goal, if possible, an hourly goal. And once you break it down and taking it that step by step, in business, you normally say you need to think of the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. But you also need to think of the next 5 days. So how do you find the balance, right? So that investing for long term is very important, but executing today, tomorrow is also equally important, because it's always done in small step, one step at a time. Like, see, a lot of big, when the companies move from 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to 100, they struggle, like, unlike what people think, not necessarily because of external reasons, not because of competition. Most of the times, beyond a certain point, companies don't scale or the missions don't scale because of the founder mentality kind of drops. Founders themselves lose that founder mentality. In a lot of cases, you lose your co-founders. It's very rare that a company of our scale, after 10 years, all the 6 founding partners are intact. Yeah. We have added at least 4 more partners who came through these acquisitions. So acquisitions were also a great way to increase the founder mentality, because you are getting more entrepreneurs. If you want to scale, you need more and more founders. It's not necessarily founders, right? People with founder mentality. That there is a huge difference between the ownership mentality and the operator mentality, right? Owners don't take no for an answer, right? They won't come back to you with excuses. They'll figure out a way to solve. But you need to give them the freedom, right? It's again, a lot of founders struggle with when they get too attached to what they build. That's why it's like you also need to kind of keep, you can't be too emotional about it. If you get too attached, then you won't delegate.
Yeah.
So The key is actually in letting it go. We have started this with a mission to make a difference in the way students learn. And because there you are creating a long-term impact. Obviously, we've changed how we do it because based on what is available and because you're able to make a bigger impact. But what we have started out with, the mission with which you've started out with, we have not deviated even a single bit. How we are doing might be very different because we'll be offering more and more things.
Yeah.
And because it's important that that existential flexibility is important if you want to stay relevant, right? You need to disrupt your own model multiple times over if you want to be, if your aspiration is to build something which will last for decades and not, if you're a serial entrepreneur, or create, like if you are doing a business and doing this to just make money, it's very easy to retire. So it's like, but not when you are living your dream. There's an unfair advantage of being in a sector where you do good, you will end up doing well. Or you do well, you will end up doing good. There are not many sectors like that. So yeah. That's an unfair advantage, but it's a very long game. It's very, very long term. So
of course.
You can't do this for 2-3 years and make an impact.
What do you mean by when you say founder's mentality? What is founder's mentality?
You don't take no for an answer. That's founder mentality. Everything else is, you'll figure out. If like, now that figuring out can be by you, you'll have to learn new things, but you won't come back with an excuse, right? You will be at it till you get it. How will you check whether people have that? There are people, like you should be able to tell them that if it works, it's because of you. If it doesn't work, it's because of you. Not many people will take that second part. They don't want to take, if it doesn't work, it's then, yeah, everyone wants to take credit, but the real founders will take ownership for both when things are going good and when things are going bad.
How do you create more founders around? Because there's a thing called, I 100% believe in this thing. There's a thing called founders energy.
Yeah.
Okay. It starts with one, but it spreads in a way that you're 200 people, 20 people or 5,000 people or just two people. Like, you know.
How do you increase founder mentality
in an organization?
Team,
exactly.
In organization. Because that's easy. It's because how do you create founders? Because I have done this now for 10 years, what I've seen. And it might not work every time, but founders are born or entrepreneurs are born only when you try and do new things.
Right? Yeah.
And when you try and do things and you fail and you encourage them to be action biased so that they go and do things and figure out rather than waiting for instructions to come. And if you penalize those mistakes, then you are killing
the entrepreneurial spirit. Okay, see, you keep using a word called existential flexibility.
Yeah.
Go deeper on that. Tell me more about it.
In simpler language, okay, it's nothing but you need to make sure that you're relevant and like the complacency cannot set in. Like just because you are doing it in a certain way and today you are successful, what made you successful in the last 5 years, you can't take it for granted, right?
Oh,
you also, you always need to question the existence. So, and that... that flexibility to disrupt your own model multiple times, that's a simpler explanation for that. So, it's we have done, if you see, till 2015, we were 100% offline in services and teaching in stadiums.
Yeah.
But the day we launched, literally the month we launched the learning app, we stopped that. Now, no half measures over there, right? Because we moved from one extreme to the other extreme.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask you.
Stadiums to smartphones, those big screens in stadiums to smaller screens. So that was not a tentative step. Now, not many companies will make that shift from offline to online and still being very successful at that transition.
No. So quick runway of your journey, because you told me that it has been almost about 2 decades since the time you have started teaching, right? And many people feel like Baiju is a buzzword.
I used to teach from my school days. I used to teach in my class. I used to teach in my village. I used to teach in my college. So that's literally from my school days, I used to teach. But formally, I started teaching in a classroom. Like that's, yeah, almost
18 years. Since 18 years, you're doing this, right? And let's say the stadiums and all of this happened 11 years ago.
No, even from more than that, almost like 15 years. Like 11 years ago, we started teaching. 11 years before is when the company was started. 7 years before is where we became an ed tech company.
Okay.
So where we started using technology to...
So Baiju has become like a buzzword recently, but you've been trying to do this since last 17, 18 years now. And since 15 years is when the actual seeds started happening of becoming Baiju's, right? So that's a quick... So give me a quick snapshot of everything. Like the first, it was just you in classroom.
Yeah,
and like how did that explode? Like, what was your growth hack?
It was never started as a business. It was almost like I always used to teach in my school, college, and then I worked outside India as a service engineer with a ship management firm during one of my vacations. So that's how it all started. One of my vacation when I was in Bangalore, because all my friends were in Bangalore and they were trying to ace their next exam, because in India, we keep on running behind exams. So they were trying to ace the next exam. So they came to me for help. Something which started like that during weekends just took off to an extent where, like, first formal session was for 30 plus of my friends and their friends. Seconds, then it started growing like a geometric progression. So from 30 to 1200 in a matter of weeks. And I told my dad that I'll try doing this for, because I extended my vacation. I told I'll try doing this for 6 months. If it works, I'll continue. I won't go back. Okay. And you also need to understand, for like for a middle class parent, that's a big risk. But yeah, it was never I was never pressurized on why you are doing this. Eh? That's exactly an extension of the freedom which was always given, because
Didn't question you.
No,
I was like, "Mera beta kuch bhi kar sakta hai."
And no, he wanted me to do things which I love. So like, that's how I would want to believe. So and then. Then never looked back. So it just scaled from Bangalore to like students started coming from other cities. So very soon it reached a stage where it used to be like Saturday morning Bangalore. And instead of them all, like when large numbers started coming, I thought that like rather I'll go there. So it used to be like Saturday morning Bangalore, Saturday evening Chennai, Sunday morning Bombay, Sunday evening Pune, and Monday to Friday 5 more cities. So I started traveling to 9 different cities every week.
Wow.
Now, why I'm telling this is not to like boast of anything. It's to tell something very important, right? Because it's a lot of people think, oh, these guys raised money from somewhere and suddenly became big and got luck. But something which you cannot underestimate is a simple one-liner, that hard work works.
That's
not many
point.
People know these things. But what that created is it created a large student following. So which has played a big role in where we are today is because almost all the first 300 employees came from the student base. Six wow. founding partners, all of them are students. So that created a very strong core team who believed in the mission, who joined not because we were a brand or we were VC funded, but because of the mission.
Of course. So you started with 30 people, then it went off cities and cities, and then those cities turned out to be big stadiums with 20,000 people, 25,000 people attending your math class. Then those 25,000 people gave you an opportunity to find out your set of founding team members, your team members in the beginning, right? Your partners, your leaders, everybody. What do you think, according to you, not according to data, it's what, like, what's a gut feeling? What do you think is a growth hack that worked for you? What was in you that it just scaled? I mean, you worked extremely hard for 3 years. Okay. And you were teaching for 3 years.
No, many years.
I'm just saying, like, say, the journey, let's say, for many years, you worked very hard. Right. What was that?
Still work harder. Because as I mentioned, there is no, that if that complacency starts setting in, if you think that you are successful, game is over, right? There's no question of, as long as you are passionate about what you do and you are able to make an impact, you should not slow down. But I don't think there is any single event or instance which has got us up to this place. It has always been about how do we make it bigger? How do we make it better? Most importantly, right? And then figuring out, and most importantly, as teachers, like those who started this, none of us were conventional teachers. As teachers, you'll always think of what students want. Now, if you are creating solutions based on what students want, in this case, they are the consumers. And then like your product market fit is solved, right? And after that, it's about at the right time taking those big decisions, right? It's thinking out of the box and now you can say that maybe instead of stopping at a classroom, I went and booked an auditorium without worrying, will it get filled? Because like the classroom was of capacity of 70, 80. When the next class, when more people came and started standing outside, that's not a... those are decisions taken like on the go, right? Like there was an auditorium in the same college, which we went and booked. Those initial sessions were free, in fact, when I was teaching my friends, right? Because I was not doing it for money. I was just doing it as a hobby, which ended up becoming business. So, then we went and booked the auditorium. There was a huge cost associated with it. If we were not able to fill 60, 70% of the auditorium, which is 600, 700 students, And there was no precedence of me taking a class even for 100 students.
Yeah.
But had the confidence to like go and book the stadium, go and book the auditorium. And then that got filled in 6-7 weeks. So that, see, fear of failure is what stops most of the people from achieving their actual potential. Entrepreneurs as well as individuals, right? So in that's not in my dictionary. It's always about, because a lot of things are uncertain, right? When you are in a segment where there is no playbook for success, how do you learn? By doing things, right?
Yeah.
By doing things. But making sure that, like, do one step at a time. Don't make big mistakes. Course correct. And then when we see a path, go big and make it. So.
Okay. So what was your marketing at that time? I mean, it takes guts to fill like 600 people, right? Like, how were you marketing yourself?
So it was word of mouth. So it was like, I used to do everything. Like, if you get the first 100 students in an auditorium, then like by next class, they will bring all their friends. So I used to just simply tell at the end of the class that you like it, you bring your friends. So very simple, like first class free. So freemium model, like what we follow today, right? It's a freemium model.
The word follows.
Like, we ask them to bring their friends. See, it's as much as what I used to teach in those sessions, what students, like they always have told me, is like they learn a lot in terms of, it's not that I never used to teach them. That's what I was telling you. Like, I kind of enabled them to learn better by giving them the right, by making sure that they understand concepts and kind of downplaying the fear of exams in their mind. And so 50% was about enabling them, and maybe like to a large extent, they also got motivated to. So a good teachers will do mentoring well, like will enable them to learn well, and will also motivate, right? And so that, there's a lot of students who told like, yeah, I didn't do well I didn't get into the IIMs or this thing, but I learned how to be the best version of myself. I use math to motivate and common sense to motivate. So like, it was a big surprise for a lot of them when I simplified those math concepts to an extent where it became, I normally tell all of them that this is below your level. You tell that 5 times, people will start thinking, oh, it's below my level. See, where people like accept failure most of the times is even before doing it, right? It's that there are so many other great teachers, better teachers, right? But many won't think of booking a stadium and taking, because that fear of failure is that inhibits from even doing things. Like, now, if you're not scared of failure, then who will learn? And
Interesting. So it was word of mouth. It was
all word of mouth initially. All word of mouth. And it also, as I mentioned, this was done in a way which is, there are enough talking points. So, and they will also learn so many things that they would want to go back and show off.
So the reason was going from offline to online was this?
See, at that point of time, smartphones were taking off. There was an app for everything else, but there was no learning app.
Yeah.
So we knew it will become better once we start doing
personalizing
it. With, because of interactions, and also we made the content better by creating it in a studio with we might have the largest movie studio and game studio in the country, much bigger than entertainment houses. Thousands of people. When you come to Bangalore, you should just visit that. How it's done at a scale which you can't even think of. There's the difference is we create math movies and science games, and like trying to change the way students learn in India as well as in many other countries. And we strongly believe that. This is one segment where we have such a competitive advantage, India and Indians. So like the global champions has to come out of India. See, you need 3 things, right? You need the ambition, you need skill, and you need access to capital. This trifecta is there. Now, obviously, you can say in the current macro environment, access to capital is not that easy. But these are all cycles. These are all, if you're thinking of next 10, 20 years, you won't worry about the next 6 months or next 12 months of cycles will come and go, right? These challenging macro environments. But otherwise, people have always been bullish about Indians. Today, they're also bullish about India.
Yeah.
So there is, I've heard this many times that people are bullish about Indians, right? Because that aspirational young country, average age of 28, 29, and such a large young population, very aspirational, very hungry to prove, hungry. So that's our biggest strength, right? They've always been like investors or like people have been very bullish on Indians. Today, they're also bullish on India. And so it's the right time to like,
if
there's never been a better time to start. Yeah, you can say maybe the current, if you're only thinking of 6-12 months, but that's not how you think of your mission, right? Like
The real missions are where you don't keep a timeline. You have to be like literally, that's when your best sense of your biggest competitive advantage can be if you are thinking the longest, if you're trying to do something for 10, 20, 30 years, and that's, you can do it only if you're passionate about it. Otherwise, if you're just running a business, like multiple roadblocks along the way, at some point of time, you'll quit.
So you technically, you want to brand yourself that, hey, I'm Disney, but I give better results than I am. Like, how do you do that? It's so difficult for you,
right? We have taken a conscious, this thing on focusing on students because they are the, you want students to use the product because that's the most challenging part. And you want them to love the product. So we have talked about, in a country like India, we have talked about love for learning early on, right?
Yeah.
So we don't want parents to force this upon them. Because that is when, like, then it's not organic. So if students are talking about, and good thing about students and kids, they like something, they talk about it. So that's becomes a big plus point. So that student-centric approach while creating the product, as well as while creating the go-to-market strategy, played a big role. And that was a very refreshingly different approach, talking about love for learning in India, where everyone else was talking about results grades.
Yeah.
Because our approach is organic. If you create that love for learning, results will come. And that has worked out very well. So we were able to stand out and create this huge brand.
Brand ambassador. You're Shah Rukh Khan as your brand ambassador, right? Like that's...
He's again...
What was your thought process? Like, why him?
Someone who's appealing to that age group and someone who's self-made, someone who's very articulate, all of that played. But and it has worked out very well for us. It's in terms of... That has increased with initially when we onboarded Shah Rukh Khan as a brand ambassador. Our brand awareness in especially in North and many other, like, went up. And then we had to... We became a bigger brand in North. Mm-hmm. And then we added many regional brand ambassadors to kind of match that. Right. So it has worked out very well. So those investments in terms of...
Branding hasn't worked out.
The brand ambassadors as well as... the visibility campaigns which we did with Jersey Deal and many others have helped us in creating, because that brand awareness is important, because for students to even try out something new and also build that trust among parents, it's important.
I was reading, like, I don't know where I read it. I think it was some blog or something. It's written that Shah Rukh Khan says that one of my biggest mistakes was not trusting Baiju's too soon, like something like that. He was offered equity plus cash deal or something, and he rejected something like that. Is that true?
I have not seen this. That is true, but I don't know where you saw the comment. Yeah.
Yeah, like he said it, like, it's one of the biggest mistakes of my life that I didn't take all equity, because that would have given me much more, like, that would have helped me maximize wealth and impact way more than anything else.
Yeah.
So you were talking about, like, you know, people have started investing. People were always bullish about Indians, and now they're bullish about India as well. Why do you feel so? Like, what are the key indicators why people are bullish on India as of now?
Like a few bright spots in the world right now with the kind of growth which we are seeing, very aspirational. Our young population is our biggest strength, right? And with the kind of changes which we are seeing, which we have seen in the last 2-3 years with pandemic and remote working. And today, like, previously only what was available to a privileged few, where those who got an opportunity to go to US, a very small percentage. Today, you can be in a small village, small town in India, access to internet, you can do anything on your own. You can start on your own, right? That's such a big... Think of, other than a few 100,000 Indians getting that opportunity, being in an environment to make an impact. Today, that's open to everyone. So, the next 10, 20, 30 years... It's like will become like so many opportunities are available to us, and we are hardworking without any doubt. And our CEOs have made, like, proven that. So everybody kind of talks about negative about what is there, and there are a lot of good things about our education, which the intensity taken in its right spirit can be a good thing. That competitiveness which you get, and that work ethics which you learn, in all of them are good things. So it's important to, what was the biggest challenge before is entrepreneurship was like not a celebrated thing. Now that part is slowly getting done, but it's again, we also need to make sure that in terms of, if you want to create global champions coming out of India, we need to make sure that we need to make people believe that, and that's why it's a responsibility. Like what we do, and over the next 5-10 years, can also inspire many more people to become entrepreneurs and start something on their own.
Yeah.
So access to internet and in a world which is like, though there are like there are certain short term challenges, but long term, today you can be anywhere and like start something, right, which was not possible even 5-10 years back.
Yeah.
So it, like when we like in 2014-15, like for us there were three big challenges. We had to convince people on India, we had to convince people on education, which is a segment where a lot of investors have lost money, and also convince them on a new business model, which is like was initially built around self-learning. So it was a big challenge in the early years, but not anymore. Today
it's easy now, like, people are seeing the signs,
they're very bullish on India, and the ecosystem is maturing, and there is
It is there. You know, like, I also believe, like, there's, though we all are, like, celebrating entrepreneurship, there's one more thing which needs to get celebrated a lot, that's collaboration. Because I feel, like, people, though they look at just one entrepreneur, like, they only look at the one person and just feel like he, this is the guy who's running the show. But technically, they're, like, a collaboration of 20 different entrepreneurs coming together and running the show. And they all are owning one thing, right? So I feel we need to celebrate that angle as well, that it's not you who's going to win. It's you with 20 others who's going to make sure that you make 20,000 more of you, and that's going to win.
Yeah.
So that collaborative effort, if we start celebrating more than just the individualism, I think it's going to do very well.
And the good part about if you make something successful in India, it's like, first of all, if you're building something for India itself, you're building for 1/6 of the world.
Yeah.
And it's such a diverse, like our diversity, and if you can make sure that like you create something which is appealing to like our diverse Indians in population, then you are also learning how to actually localize for different markets, because like in, it's not one India, right?
Yeah, diverse.
It's you won't find this kind of diversity in, you won't find this in many, in not many large countries, right? So if you can build for India, you can build for the world, provided you, again, you need to have ambition, skill, and access to capital. That if you can find all three, then and then enough people like to there is no limit to what you can achieve.
In India, we have McDonald's. That's American culture. We talk about Starbucks. That's American culture. We talk about Apple, right? We don't have any Indian brand around the world which goes out and be like, this is it. And you're putting that. You're solving that slowly. So does it ever scare you?
We have learned a lot from them. So this is one segment where I think we can teach, and we can also create something which can make an impact around the world. Because as I mentioned, every country needs, they need a Baijus. Now, unfortunately, there are not many. So which is, when I say unfortunately for the world, but yeah, it's an opportunity, because that means the competition risk is very minimal. Now, it's not easy. It's not easy to do this. Even if we can be successful in 2 or 3 big markets, that itself will be an achievement. Aspiration is there. Like aspiration is there too. Because a lot of these things in the way students learn, like in certain age groups, it's, or the skill set required is global skill set. Coding for that matter. It's like, it's the same thing. It's a, it's universe, one universal curriculum. Like you need to keep on upgrading based on all the new technologies. But the biggest advantage what we have is, this is one of those sectors where, like previously, you can see many industries where like we used to find the cost arbitrage. But I strongly feel in some of these new sectors like EdTech, we have both cost arbitrage and quality arbitrage. Finding these many people, those who are passionate about education, we care about education. Finding hundreds of thousands of people and teachers, those who are inherently passionate about education, because for all of us, that's the only way to make it big, right?
Yeah.
This is the only way people move up the social strata. It's not just about solving for accessibility, right? Like our education systems around the world needs an overhaul, right? Like now, can you build more schools and get more teachers into classrooms? That's impossible, because compared to even 10 or 20 years back, where a lot of these graduates used to stay back in small towns and villages, today they are like, with the kind of urbanization which we have seen, they're all moving to cities. So we don't have teachers in our small towns. And billions have been invested in, now by creating more infrastructure, getting more teachers into classroom, you can't solve these challenges at scale. Challenges around access to good quality teachers or education, Personalization is impossible. And that's where technology as an enabler can play a big role. So there is an opportunity for something like this anywhere in the world. So it's up for taking. So and as I mentioned, it's not about us alone. Like anyone who is willing to passionately do this for 5, 10, 15 years can make it big.
Build an organization. Because building an organization is difficult. Delegating those skills. Like, you know how this needs to done get done, right? You have a mission, you do it. But now there are 50,000 people who also need to do the same thing in order to reach there. So you make systems, you make processes. Like, what do you do?
It's important to, again, I don't know everything of which I do. That's why it's like, it's important to have, important to hire right people. And it's not about, and I always tell that it's not about hiring best people. It's about hiring the right people for, you are playing a game. You have like, let's say 11 positions. You find the right player for the right position, right? And then when we initially hire them, it's important to find out that they have the right mindset.
Exactly.
To learn, right mindset, flexibility. Put them in a position, see how they are playing. If they're not playing in that, you can always move them around. See, all mission or the companies are defined by its culture. So that... you have to play the game. You have to play your game, and you need to find players who can play your game, right? And but the good part is there are so many different positions, right? Like, so it's not that, so it's important to hire the right people who will culturally fit in. And that's why you need to I over index on people. I'm someone who believes that, because anyway, it's a new segment. I can't hire an expert and edtech expert, right?
Yeah.
And in segments which are in, like your sector, it's just getting defined. So in segments which are just getting defined, it's best to hire the right people and make sure that they believe in your long-term mission. It's important to make them believe long-term. Someone who's coming with a short-term mindset will go for optics.
Yeah.
So, and there is no scope for short-term optics in a long, infinite game. So hiring the right people and helping them find the right position is the key to continue winning the games. Now, how do you... I'll give you an example. Right? A lot of companies make a mistake of forgetting the key initial people. All of them have a very important role to play because they define the culture of the company. So if you, even if they can play a big role in hiring the right people because they know what works in your mission. The biggest mistakes which some of the companies make is when they move from 0-1 to 10 or 10 to 1, they forget about the 0 to 1 people.
Yeah.
Now they might, like, their original role might not be relevant, but they can still play a very important role in keeping the team together. This is why a lot of football clubs make sure that their players become managers.
Mm.
What is again underrated is the compounding effect of continuity in relationships can have an unbelievable impact in your mission. So, like, you need to value that that tribal knowledge which they'll get by spending years in the system. You can't discount that. That compounding effect of, because the advantage of 5 people who have been working for 5 years is that they know that, okay, person A is good in this and weak in this. So it's almost like I can start a sentence and someone else will complete. If there is a lot of churn at the top, you change your CPO every 2 years, product will run in 5 different directions. So, like, something which is very, it's not easy. It's not easy to keep a team together like that because egos. And so you need to build a team where people can have ego, but ask them to keep that outside.
Hmm. And what do you feel? How do you keep them together? What's the one thing which you genuinely believe in?
I think giving them, the most important thing is giving them their space. People want good people. They want accountability, right? They want the freedom. They want guidance. So they want accountability, but they want guidance. So they want mentoring. So it's...
So you play the role of a coach.
I play it should be almost to such an extent that you should feel that you're not doing anything. But you need to be there when they need support, right? They need to know that when they need support, you need to be available. It's just like literally leading from the front when there is, it's easy to do it in a peacetime, but during wartime when, like, the real leaders, like, if you can keep your calm, if you are not putting the blame on others, if you are like in crisis, you need to be upfront and helping them solve. So they need to know that you are available when they need. So not the reverse.
So access to capital is, how do you solve that problem of access to capital? Like, how do you design? Like, when you think of funding, what do you think?
Just like, it's very, just like how you select, see, if people say, if you take care of your customers and employees, they'll take care of everything else, right? Or take care of employees, like in some cases, they take, in services, they take care of the customers. But it's equally important to select the investors if, as and when it's possible. So now, some of the simple things which people overlook is, you need to raise money when you don't need it. Because if you start raising money when you need it, you won't have this luxury of selecting the right. Because in, at the end of the day, investors are also partners. You want them to be the same way. You want them to be there when you need the support. And I told you from the beginning that it's only a thin line between what you can think of as interference and support. But you need to know that they are there when you need support, right? So, so selecting in, so it's important to educate them about your mission and get them on board rather than them just jump. Sometimes when the sector is hot or when the market is hot, then you'll get investors who will just jumping in. You don't want them, because like then, just like they come in, they'll also go out.
Yeah.
So you want them to be, you want them to understand your, like how you will select your, you want your employees to join you, not because you are paying them more. You want them to join you because they believe in your mission. Like in, like if you can also get your core investors like that, that's critical, right? Because they are your partners. Investors, because beyond, as long as you have more skin in the game than all of them and you are thinking long term, investors, like they don't want to run the business. They want founders to run the business, right? In that's an ideal scenario for them. Now, so selecting investors on right terms is important, and that a lot of times if you, because I've heard like many of them, so ideally you should raise money when you don't need it.
That's a
and then you should, obviously you should allocate the capital well, as much as possible. Again, it's it changes. If you think of last 3 years, everyone wanted us to go for growth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, because it was all based on revenue multiples. Now, the because of the current macro, everyone wants us to focus on
profit.
And that's rightly so. I'm not, this is not a complaint. Like on profitability. Now, companies which are thinking long term will be able to make these shifts from one environment to another environment, peacetime to a wartime, right? And today you need to do it like a wartime CEO. Because capital is very, like capital raise, fundraising is expensive. Very challenging.
Yeah.
It's going to be, and it's expensive. But the in times like this is where you can stand out. If crisis like this, challenges like this, can differentiate foundationally strong companies and missions from the ones which are just thinking short term or the weaker ones. So, so from a fundraising or selecting investors point of view, the key is raise money what when you don't need.
So that's the one key.
And initial, what, like the first 2-3 is going to be, it's not going to be that easy. It's all about, but once you, the advantage of getting the right partners is that attracts more right partners, right? So. The key is, it's also, see, you want in investors, you should think of investors as partners.
Yeah.
Because you want them to be there when you need support. And you also want, because the disadvantage of having a lot of interference from investors is that there is nothing wrong with it. It can be like, I normally say anyone can have control, but whoever is thinking long term should have control. An investor can have control and founders can run it. But the key is, whoever is thinking long term, should have control.
Yeah, that's fair.
So in our case, because I want to run this for 20, 30 years more. So it's important to have
long-term partners.
Yeah.
So for a company like yours, or for especially an entrepreneur who's very mission-driven, two things get very important. Impact maximization and wealth maximization. In both the things, you need to create value, right? Because if you're not maximizing the wealth of your investors, the reason why they believed in this was the wealth maximization. And if you're not creating an impact, the wealth's not going to get maximized, right?
Hmm.
So tell me one point each.
Hmm.
Where do you feel is the, what is the biggest for you, like the biggest component for you to, let's say, get the maximum revenue? And what is the biggest component for you to create the maximum value?
So these two are kind of related. I don't think
they're different.
You create impact and long-term impact, everything else will follow.
Yeah.
Now, the impact is not just about creating revenue growth. Impact is the real impact is if the changing students and parents are seeing value, and that results in revenue growth, and that results in like wealth creation for investors, a wealth creation for everyone who's involved, right? So I don't think these two, you can do it independently. There is no way you can have long term. Again, short term you might be able to do optics, but if long term, it's if you don't create impact, anything which you do is not sustainable. So that, or in other words, valuation growth, if you don't consistently match with value creation, you can't even do it this long. So it's important to, so it's at any point of time, it's all about if you have access to capital, the decision is what more you can do to. Now, priorities can change. There will be times when you will prioritize growth over profitability, and there will be times where you will, that making that shift is for a foundationally, like if you're thinking long term, and most of our businesses are built over many years. We were very profitable in the early years, right? It's like you will find there are two types of entrepreneurs, those who have never seen that profitability and those who have always. So we were bootstrapped for the first many years, right? And then just before scaling and launching the learning app is where we started raising money. So it's in our DNA to, so these are foundationally strong business models. We don't do anything just for the top line. There are times when we prioritize top line growth. So, and these acquisitions which we have made in India and in US will help us to like add more value to our users. So we have been very selective in terms of deciding what to add. They've been very complementary. Apart from in most of these integrations, those founders also become partners after they join. So we have used the right structure in most cases. I'm not telling we have done it right every time. It's nobody gets it right 4 out of 5 times. 3 out of 5 times itself is considered a very high success ratio when it comes to, because I've heard people telling acquisitions are designed to fail, but we have made most of them work. Akash is growing 100% year on year, or more than 100% in just in the last 12. Great Learning is growing like that. We have scaled Osmo 4x. This is a tough to integrate cross-border acquisition in US, 4x in just 2.5 years. So we have a challenge only in Whitehat Junior, like since we're talking about specific things here. So, and this, we have been able to achieve this by integrating those entrepreneurs and like taking the best of what they have and using the best of what we have and not having that. A lot of times when a large company acquires a small company, you try changing everything and you kill the culture. You change people, you change culture. And you change culture, you kill the company. That's something which we have been very like careful in terms of what we have done with most, wherever we've, it's been possible. Like we have, like just to be fair here, we have not made acquisitions to neutralize a competition, unlike what people think. Because people always talk about, okay, Byju's is making these acquisitions to kill the competition. But not a single one of them. So we have not made, because that's another way people, why people, so to neutralize a competition, you can make acquisitions. But all our lucky acquisitions, all of them are in segments which are very complementary. Akash, so that test prep segment, they were segment leaders.
Yeah.
So Osmo, Epic, Tinker, these are all very complementary in terms of subject and market. Osmo, Tinker, Epic, all of them are in US where we have that's also an opportunity for us to get distribution.
Yeah.
In India, we are giving distribution.
There, those products,
there we are getting distribution. And not just distribution, right? There we are also getting these exceptional founders who we think that can help us. So, because it's that founder mentality and founders is critical to scaling businesses or launching businesses in some markets. So
fair. But people get a lot of things, they're misconcepted about a lot of these things, right? Now that we hear from you, it's a different thing.
Because none of these companies were our competition, the big ones like Akash was not our competition. Whitehat Junior was not our competition.
Yeah.
They were doing coding. Osmo, Epic, Tinker, they were not at all our competition because that's in a very different market. So it's all complementary. We have, so that way, by doing this, we are also creating new markets and new segments and helping them grow. And these are integrations where we are also bringing in the India advantage. Then in US acquisitions, the biggest advantage, the complementary advantage which we bring in is what I mentioned already, the cost and the quality arbitrage of building some of those products in India. And these are pioneering products. So building some of those products in India, and second, India as a revenue center where we have also a potential to launch some of them in India. So it's both India as a revenue center and India as a cost center, because it's both cost and quality arbitrage.
So
So there is a lot of, people might think it's all done with some intuition, but there's a lot of thought which has gone. Yeah, we have done, we have gone aggressive in terms of, in our acquisitions during a time where we realized that the online learning is like, we'll skip a few years in the next 10-year plan. And none of them are short term in terms of plans.
It's a big game.
And most of them have worked out well. So no regrets.
So, you know, forget what people think. Tell me, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do people misunderstood about you? Or like they don't get about
I don't. I
about
don't,
you or by Jews, like anyone.
Yeah. I don't think, see, to be very honest, I don't think that's the nature of the media. That's the nature of social media. Like nothing is as good as what you read. So it's like, I can't complain. It's the same media talks all the good things, right? So it's the rags to riches story. They only celebrate.
Yeah.
So nothing is as good as what media writes. And nothing is as bad as, it's something in the middle, right? Nothing is as bad as what they write. So now if your question on, am I getting if the question is, has it been a challenge with some of this perception? Answer is, to some extent, it's been tough, but it's not something which I know that there is no, like anyone who actually gets one level deeper, either in understanding the business or understanding us, they have nothing against us. In fact, the media has nothing, there is no personal grudge because we don't have anything against anyone. It's more about, there is feedback in what some of them write, which we take it well. And as I told you, it's the key is, you need to see, you can't, no one is above criticism.
Yeah, right? Of course.
No one is above fair criticism. So, but like longer term, all these things, people, like anyone who takes some effort in understanding what we do and the intent. So no one can question the intent. So it's like when you run a large business, will you make mistakes? You will make a lot of mistakes. But if you're not willing to correct, then that deserves a lot more criticism. But as I told you, we hear everything, but you need to choose what you listen to. And that's exactly what I was phrasing it in a different way, that there's a lot of noise, but there's also feedback. Now, it is not that our real user students, they're not on any of this media. They love, so our biggest indicator is, so students are very happy. Our NPS have improved significantly. It's like most of our products have NPS in the 65 to 70 range. And this is done by the investors, those who come on board. And we have been able to get interest from investors even during times like this. We've just closed another round. They do deep research. They don't just take an outside in view, right? They do deep research, consumer research, every other research. And they get satisfaction in terms of what is misunderstood, if you ask me about us, is, because it's a new segment. Education is a very sensitive topic. What I can tell you is that every product which we kind of try to make popular to the whole world is something which we use at home. So it's not something, my son, he doesn't learn from Baiju, the teacher. He learns from Baiju's products. So that's a level of conviction. So there is no question of, in fact, that's something which we've always, that's what gives us the conviction, right? We truly believe in what we do to an extent where this is the only way my son will learn. So you will never find, because you'll find like sometimes you'll be in a segment where you will make some of these products popular and addicted to people, but will ban that for your own kids.
So
the level of conviction is to an extent, this is how I have learned. This is how our kids will learn. That's true for not just for me. That's true for all the leaders. And if we don't have conviction, and the products which we buy is only when we have the conviction that this is how we would want our kids to learn from. Now there is nothing more than that. So there's no. That's why my request is that anyone. My first question is when someone like meets and writes is that, have you tried the product? Have you used it? Because if like a lot of people don't, because these products are for kids, right? They don't use it for, but someone who has used the product, someone who has met, so they will never question the intent. I'll say heart is in the right place.
No, that's given. I was just asking what I'm really meant, like, what do you think people get wrong? Your intent is right. What you're doing is great.
I don't think there's anything right or wrong, to be very honest. Like it's an opinion.
And you feel like the opinion in recent time for some people turned out to be negative because they didn't go one level deep? Or what was the reason? Like, why is the...
See, when you do anything at this scale, there will be detractors. And normally the detractor's voice gets amplified, right? In any media, because that's what...
That was sells.
Yeah, that's how, that's what sells, that's what travels faster. But I'm not telling, there are things which is out of misconsumption or they are not like deep enough to understand or not close to the action. Now, those who are closest to the action, as I mentioned, even with all the noise, none of the top mid-level employees have left in the last 12 months. Not a single investor has exited the company. We have 70 plus investors, those who are sitting on handsome returns. Now, these are objective indicators. Now, the misconceptions are around, there is misconception around sales. Now, at the end of the day, sales is only 20% of our workforce. Now, in sales, there will be little more aggression than most of other functions, right? Because that's how sales is done. Now, we are continuously improving how we curb mis-selling and aggressive selling, which is seen in all the objective reports. See, there will be anecdotal things where, like, there will be one-off incidents where people would have gone overboard, right? But when you have 50,000 people and 10,000 salespeople, there will be one-off incidents, right? Mm. But that gets amplified.
Yeah.
Now, we have, that's one, if you are asking about what are the, what are the things which people misunderstand is, the one is around sales, the second one is around financing. Now, financing is such an important part of the creating that impact. It's a win-win for customers because they get to pay over 12 months. That makes it accessible to a much larger percentage of the population. Those who, they need this more than the affluent metro counterparts, right? So having in small town, that's how people are used to paying. It's such a strong tool for us to make it more affordable and more accessible.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. These two are, like, if you ask me how we have built the sales team and how we have created financing options for customers are, like, for us, those who are closest to the action, for us and investors, these are two big positives. But it gets represented as negatives in the media. It's the same thing which has been playing out. But again, I have no complaints. Anyone who takes... like willing to spend that an hour extra in understanding, they know that.
Of course. That's there. So these are the two things which people get miss.
I'm not telling they're wrong. It's because
there are more clarity on how things are going.
And why we are doing those. So.
And usually it also, like, this is what happens most of the times. You pick up, see, when you're trying to do things at large, there are going to be supporters. They're going to be haters. They're going to be lovers. There'll be people who love your company and love the culture, love everything what you do. And there'll be people who'll come and in 2 months they leave and like, I don't like this at all.
Yeah. Right? Because in sales, that's always in terms of the way we have scaled the sales team. See, one thing is we are like among the startups, we might be the largest employer. Like we have 50,000 plus people and families depending on us, right? So, and in that... In sales, especially because it's a very different type of a sale. Like here, those who sell here, they also need to understand the subjects, math, science, or whatever. A lot of people try this out and they are not. So they try it out for first 3 months and then figure out some of them figure out it's not for them because it's not for everyone. Yeah. And then the reverse, sometimes you also figure out they are not able to do it, right? Mm. So there is now. We have not done optics by hiring them and keeping them in a third party company and things like that. We hire them inside Byju's. A lot of big companies, they do that.
Yeah.
So again, it's not as bad as what people think. Is there scope for improvement? Like 100%. Because in anything which when you start something, you will make mistakes, you will improve. And but there is strong intent to improve everything.
Fair.
Because there is no, we are not here to just make some quick money and get out of it. That's not why we started the company and that's not why we run this company.
So does that ever affect you? Because as things go bigger, right? And you are running the largest company in India, largest startup in the world for education, right? Does that, so you're always going to be the center of the topic for the longest time.
Yeah.
Right? It's always going to happen. This happens with lot of large scale entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah.
Does this ever affect you? Because when you get celebrated, you're going to get celebrated at large. When you get hated, you're going to get hated at large. So there's you will always be balancing a lot of love and a lot of fear, a lot of shame, a lot of, fandom. Like these many emotions. Does that affect you? Because there are so many things going on.
No, I don't. Like, again, it's if your question is this kind of negativity, whether it has no.
And not like negativity. I'm saying like,
negativity, positivity. Emotions. Yeah. No, but that's true to what I was. If you ask me, yeah, we need to like learn and take some of this as feedback. But a lot of this is noise, right? So it's not a...
Something that affected you? Ever?
No, it has nothing. Taken like... Some of this kind of what we have gone through in the last 6 months, not just the last 6 months were the toughest, not because of reasons which you know, that's mostly because I had to also make my dad all right.
Yeah.
Like he thinks I made him all right. I didn't. But it's like just by spending time. But otherwise, no, it's to be very honest, it's there's no place for, for both, right? You can't be like, you can't get too excited because someone is praising you, or you can't get too disturbed because someone is, I would say like people have no reason to hate me personally, or it's like, yeah, they can have, they will have their opinion, which they should have their opinion. It's like, it's up to them to, but someone who's like, if they start spending more time, slowly but surely the opinions will change. And the best answer to all of that is get down, put more hard work and prove them wrong. So
the work,
20
work
years, 30 years down the line, world will know that it's very fortunate to be in a segment where you can't discount the millions of students where we are making an impact. Nobody can deny that. So, and it's like beyond anything else, if things like this, if it starts getting into your head, both, right? Success cannot get to your head and like even challenges cannot get to your head. Like you have to approach this with a very calm. You won't find me. It's because in anything, it's like I'm always calm. So
always there. Right? Yeah. That's what maybe sports learning comes from.
Yeah. It's more of unlike people think that I'm very passionate, and sometimes people think it's aggressive. It's not. I am not like I. What I've learned is that there is no place for. When I make a mistake, I'm very, very happy to accept the mistake, because if you don't accept the mistake, if you're not willing to acknowledge, how will you learn?
Yeah.
Your learning starts when you know that you made a mistake or you don't know. You have to, that's why I was telling that it's about humble enough to know your limitations and what you need to learn, and still confident enough, bold enough to also believe that you can make an impact, because otherwise, how do you make the next move?
You know, what I feel, maybe I'm wrong, it's, I think like you have a very human side of you. It just doesn't get reflected when people don't get to know you. I mean, it's just like spending that day, the hour on a call today and just going, getting to know you more from your people, researching more, now talking to you. There's a human side of you, which like from the outside world till the time I started, like found it, you sound like a machine. You look like someone who's like, okay.
No, nobody like, will know.
Like there's a machine which is 24/7 working to make sure that this large thing which you have created, it just goes on and it keeps getting bigger and bigger. Like that was look like. I'm just like, okay, sorry if I'm like going.
No, anything. But if
I'm
you,
I'm telling
is,
you honest, like people won't so human.
No, you're like, see, I think again, I am someone who like objectively, if you take a look at it, if that is the case, people won't stay with you so long. Out of the first 300 plus employees, like almost 250 plus are still there. It's 10 years.
Yeah.
Out of the founding partners, all of them are there, right?
You,
so it's
people,
like
care.
Those who are close to me, it's all about. So if you ask me, the most important thing is like empathy and compassion. Now that I won't take any credit. It's like, that's how we are all wired. It's like by growing up in that environment. So there is no, don't think that it's like, I am not special. That's, you are wired like that. So it's an unfair advantage because people expect when they see that there is such a difference between perception and reality, or see, it's not just for me, right? It's a lot of people think that once you start people adding the tag of a billionaire and a unicorn and a decacorn and all, people expect, now this founder is supposed to act in a certain way and things, all that. But it's such an unfair advantage when if you can be yourself, when and if these tags and names and fancy names is not changing you, it's a big advantage, because people expect you to act in a certain way. And when you know that, see, if you have met me 10 years back, 20 years back, you won't find any change. You absolutely won't find any change, other than things which made me happy 20 years back, 10 years back, is like nothing has changed. Yeah, having access to some more money, I'm able to make a bigger impact. But yeah, otherwise,
the same.
Because mission is the same. It's more hard work, because you'll put in more effort. It's not because it's challenging or you don't have people. When you know that your mission is working, you have to put in more effort.
Yeah.
Not that you need to become complacent, right? That all those things you will do if you are thinking, oh, you got enough money, and if you are doing this for money, not when you are doing this to make an impact. Yeah, you look at all those metrics and all that to show that you are moving in the right direction. That's important, like looking at all those boring numbers. But that's not why we started this in the first place. So it's an unfair advantage. I've heard people telling that, and this is important for everyone to keep in mind. When you are successful, or if you think if people are thinking you are successful, you have no reason to be there is no reason for you not to be nice. You need to be like extra nice when the world has given you everything. Mm-hmm. There is no unfortunately, some people are not like that. But you tell me, like, why should I not be nice to people? Why should I not be nice to everyone in this world? It's like, when people like us, if we act crazy, it's criminal.
Yeah.
Like, some people will have excuse and the circumstances for them not to be nice. But if you can be what got you up to this, if you can be the same 10 years, 20 years down the line, it's an unfair advantage.
It is. And for the larger society is there. But what I saw, like the little things which I noticed in you, you have a very, apart from the world, what is given to you, apart from the things that you got to be nice, there's a very little things which you don't have to be, but you are. Like, let's say for the one little example is like, hey, you know what? Do you want like a local Kerala biryani right now? There was no reason for you to ask me this. Like, it would have been, there's a lunch prepared for you. You can have it and go. Like, you're not even supposed to do that. Right, you're not even asked to do that. There's a timeline to it. There's a specific hours to it, right? So it can start at a time, end at a time. You can be nice at the time, and then you can do your work. And just like those little like elements, I think that makes a lot of difference for a lot of things. Just making sure that, you know, asking me the first thing, which I was like, hey, do you think I should also wear a jacket so that you don't feel alone? You were comfortable in yourself,
yeah.
But because I was wearing, you said, are you comfortable? And you know, these are the little things which you're not supposed to do.
Again, it makes you more human. I think people just overrate these things. This should be the norm.
What do you feel is the most important thing as a founder for you to focus on, at least in the initial stage of the company? That is it the branding? Is it the operations? What do you feel like? How do I decide?
I think you got the first part right, in terms of you are doing something which you are passionate about. Now it's about finding the right team, finding the right product now, and getting the product market fit before you invest in marketing and branding.
So the first is PMF, and then you get into more marketing.
Yes. We did that for like many years before we actually, like what people, we did, we were finding product market fit for many years before we actually launched in a big way. And once we got convinced about the product, we went, then you should not waste time, because you should, like, faster you do it, you are making it, you're creating a very high entry barrier for potential competition.
Fair. No, so, okay.
But it's all about, see, the key is the team, right? It's about the team. It's never about the founders and the co-founders. It's about how do you identify the right 10 people. That there, if you invest and find the people who will commit. See, they should not. They should commit the next 5 years to you, and you should commit the next 5 years. The same, right? It's not them. It's a mutual commitment to each other.
You're a teacher, and you've built like now a large company as an entrepreneur. You know something about consumers. Right, because obviously that it all, that the thinking derives from how do you please your customer in a way where you're not only giving them the right satisfaction, but also pushing them to learn and get better, right? So what do you think is the key? Like, how do we get to customers?
That's again, you making sure that, I come from that kind of a background. Someone who's experienced all these challenges firsthand, right? So we know what takes on the ground.
Right? Yeah. Works for India? Like, I want to know that. Like, what do you think, what works for India? Like, how do you convince consumers here, customers here?
It's very different for different segments. People are very emotional. So if you have a very high expectation in a segment like education, but if you get their trust, then you will build something which will last. Because in education and healthcare and all that, if you build the right product and the right brand, you'll find that some of the brands which people still remember, they don't even offer their products and services today. That's the advantage of
right brand.
Building the right brand and after getting the right product or services. So I think what is important is like the best part is like in today in almost all the business models, right? You can like initially you can launch something based on what you think is right, get it to 70-80%, and then learn continuously from users, right? That's easier than ever before today, right? Yeah. You know what they want. Like when you are launching a new segment, you can't ask users what they want because they won't know because it's a new segment. But in our case, we launched something based on what teachers thought. Again, taking continuous feedback from students in our stadiums and auditoriums. And then after that, it's all data driven. Like last 5 years, 6 years, today we don't ask anyone, right? It's just based on asking someone what they want, they might not know. But looking at what they do is, and in all tech enabled products, it's easier than ever before. Consumer research, when there is no, like is helpful, but not exactly when you are launching a new segment.
So I think I want you to go deeper on trust because it's user. So I feel brand is trust. How do you build trust? What are the key components?
By long term, it's that trust comes from parents and like or consumers getting what they want from your offering, right? And if they see that it's a real value for their time and money, like in some cases it's time, in some cases it's money, right? That's when if there are tangible positive outcomes, you build the brand and the trust along with it, right? You build the trust and then that improves the brand. It's very difficult to build and easy to lose. So it's not easy. There is no shortcuts. But normally my answer to that is if you are trying to do something for 20 years, your approach will be very different from if you are trying to just do something for 3 years, create an outcome for investors, do an IPO and take an exit. Then your approach will be different. And I am not blaming, that's one strategy, right? But otherwise, if your idea is to, okay, you will build a long lasting brand. You look at the top 10 brands in India. All of them are multiple decades old.
Yeah.
So brands are not built over years. They're built over decades. So we're just going through, like we just entered the top 20 brand in a very established research. We are the youngest brand in that segment. All others are like, so it's built over decades. It's like, over years, you can't build a brand.
Sometimes there are, let's say, bad negative press or idea. Or let's say, recently, there was a lot of noise about the financials, the reports, or like auditing, all of that. This gets hard. So does it happen like your team has like a little mistrust and do people come to you and be like...
No, I think the biggest advantage is that's advantage of having such a core, closely knit team. It's other than the challenge in the media, we didn't... People closest to the action, both from the... Because employees, the founders, co-founders, they are closest to the action. They know that
nine out of ten things
is exaggerated. Like, again, I'm not telling that there is some... Other than audit delay, everything else was just amplified and exaggerated. So they know that it's such a... There's a huge difference between perception and reality. So we didn't face... To be very honest, we didn't have that internal challenge because And that's where having a large team or such a large team of co-founders helps, because
everybody's
each of us can focus on. So the business grew significantly even. And these are still, again, I'm not downplaying. In growing fast, we have also overlooked. We were playing so upfront that we have to strengthen the defense now, which we have started.
Are things that bad as people talk about? Or like, what's the scene? Like, why is there so much noise? You want to address that?
No, it's in terms of, I think that's the worst is over, to be like, in terms of, because we got a, after like delay in audit, we got a clean report at the end of the day. It's like 20,000 plus man hours of work, which Deloitte did. The fact that we got a clean report, so there are no real issues on the ground. Obviously, there are systems to be improved, like finance functions to be improved. We have to hire a strong defense team over there, like which in growing fast and making these acquisitions, like some of those functions, but it's, that's easy to solve.
So. But it was only like, so there was only just about delay strengthening and system strain.
Yeah, there is no real issue other than delay, which is what is proven once the report came.
And now nobody's talking about it.
And it's also the fact that from that year to next year, the business grew significantly. All like 5 out of 6 businesses are growing better than the previous year. So the business challenges, there isn't just one, and that's a smaller part of the business. And again, we will, what like people will see over the next many years is that, everyone, like all companies go through challenges, but these are not systemic challenges. It's like,
the first is you're talking about the audit delay. Everybody's talking about, hey, why there was a delay? Is there something going on? Why was Akash not paid? Or I don't know, like 10,000 things which people are talking about, but everything's related to that. So what's the scene?
So
why was it there's a
I'll
delay?
I'll answer one by one. Yeah, there is this audit delay was truth, that there was an audit delay, but everything else around it is just exaggerated in terms of now that the report is out and it's a clean report after like a deep work by Deloitte, and with what is very clear is there are no real issues.
Okay.
Other than there is scope for improvement, and which we understood, acknowledged in terms of improving the finance function and hiring a global CFO, all of that. There's no real issue.
This is
that.
A question, like for the longest, your large company, for the longest time, you didn't have a CFO. Is there a particular reason for that?
No, we had a CFO, and during this audit, he had health issues and he had to retire in between. He had to like take a break during that.
Okay.
And like, and we have enough people in the finance function, though the CFO was not there, but there is scope for improvement over there. And we are hiring a strong finance partner who will help us scale the company from here on. Okay. And on the second thing on Akash Blackstone payment, that's completely misunderstood. Over there, it's like it was a decision between buyer and seller to follow some regulatory guidelines and we were just following that. And that's also and complete now. It was never an issue to be sorted, to be very honest. It was just because people were just telling that, oh, like maybe we don't have cash to pay. Like we are well capitalized. That one thing which I have told in the beginning also, that we've always raised money when we don't need money. So we're very well capitalized with, but there was a challenge in terms of, we were following a pricing guideline by regulatory authority, and that part is done and that's closed.
See, like a lot of people say that to fund this, you were not capitalized. You had such a large burn rate because of your acquisitions and stuff. Now you need a lot of funds and you're not being able to raise. And that's why you self-funded it. And you were like, right.
No, how do I?
I was like, 400
this is a positive
million.
Or negative? It should be a positive news. It should be a positive news that
actually 400 stage, million self-funding in a company should be really
at
positive
at this stage
news.
Instead of taking money out. Now, that's also, that funding is also, like most of this is also done by investors. Those who are funding me so that I am investing that in the company. So it's done through. Now, if it is just for optics, I can just do 50 million to show my conviction in the company. I don't need to do 400 million. This is in line with long-term thinking and increasing the ownership in the company. Now, in terms of capital availability and burn, so we are well capitalized. We don't just raise money looking at the burn rate and like how much cash is left and for how many months. That's fortunately never been the scenario. We were well capitalized, like more than $1 billion, and our like burn is significantly lower today.
So it just, people got it wrong. That $400 million was, it was not just completely you, it was people investing in you so that you could get it. And then that's in a line with your long-term strategy.
Yeah, it's not because I don't have $400 million to it. It's someone else investing for me to invest in Byju's. So it's as founders, if I'm going all in. I want to do this for next. I've been doing it for almost 18 years. I want to do this for 20, 30 years more. So having more skin in the game than everyone else is very useful. So.
And you correctly pointed out, I think this should be a positive news, not a negative.
It's a big positive. It's like at this, like you won't find many founders putting this kind of money
at this stage
back in the company instead of like, there's a times where people will start taking money out of the company in secondary exits and all that. So
this is a time people take 400 million out, not put 400 million in. Yeah.
And you give me, if you have money, give me 100 million. I'm going to put that back in Byju's. That's the only thing which we've been doing. That's the only thing which we'll do. So
there's not a question. It's just like a perspective. Like, what's the future of education in India? Is it completely online? Is it offline? Because now that you're mixing everything together, what's it? Like, and yeah, it's a curious question.
See, for students, there are things which they can learn better online and there are things which they can only do offline. So we have, after starting with, so we were offline till 2015. We went completely online.
Mm.
We created all these products and services, which are pure online or digital products. And then now with, in the last few months, we have started, we have kind of defined and we are scaling a hybrid format where we are bringing the best of both. We are giving students an option of learning online most of the days at home. And they also come to a nearby location. And we have now 200 plus centers, which we scaled in the last literally 3 months. We have scaled it to more than 200 centers where we offer this hybrid format. Where like you should walk in and try out, but because that I think is going to be a very strong format in the like today and tomorrow. And ideal schools also should follow a hybrid format, but that's making changes with schools and schools is going to be a Herculean task.
Yeah.
So we have created this parallel network of hybrid centers where students can benefit from the best of both. At the end of the day, it's everything is hybrid.
Immersive
today,
learning,
right?
Interactive learning.
Work is going hybrid. Learning is going to be hybrid. Or it has its, because there are certain things which can be done way better online, like giving access to the star teachers or personalized learning. You can do better, and self-learning, you can, where you do it on your own, can be done way better online. But the physical interaction, mentoring and support and conducting assessments in an actual test environment, all of that can be done better
offline
at a center near you. So combining the best of both. So the future of learning, like most of other sectors, is going to be hybrid.
Where do you feel, apart from education, where do you think the next big unicorn can be built? Like, what is a sector or an industry where people are watching this? Because lot of people watch this to learn how to spot ideas, how to find businesses and all that. So what is the next big industry?
I think it's in India, I won't specify any sector. It's all these, even the conventional sectors are ripe for disruption. As we are seeing now, whether it's fintech, edtech, and these are core sectors in an economy, and with, we have millions who are yet to come online. So it's not, even though there are a lot of unicorns in these sectors, there is so much more which can be done even in edtech, if you consider, we are only solving, we are making it easy for students. If you ask me, there can be something which can make it easy for teachers in classrooms, in schools. There can be something which can help enterprises do reskilling, upskilling. There are many models, but something which will help teachers, something which will help schools, the space is wide open. So, and that's just in edtech itself. But like that, all these core sectors, and with more and more people coming online and having access to digital services, there is an opportunity to
disrupt.
Even media, it's like, because we have such a large, high quality like workforce today in the, where you can like tap into a lot more people than 5 or 10 years back because they have access to internet. Just to give you an idea, we have an opportunity to create the largest pool of teachers for the world, like where those who will teach from home to students anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
That's the, it's almost like you want to do something, you can go online and start doing that.
Yeah. Today,
right? You want to teach anything which you want, you go online and start teaching, you will find your audience.
True.
I'm not just talking about unicorns, but there is an opportunity to create like
multiple million-dollar companies.
Maybe
well.
Smaller ones, but there can be, the opportunities are unlimited. So yeah. The next few decades are for Indians and for India.
You've done business in India. Now you're doing business in US. What do you feel is the major difference between two countries? Like what's there in US and which should learn, India should learn, and what's there in India which US should learn?
At the difference, what we still need to learn and bring that it's not just in our business is that entrepreneurship is very, very well celebrated in US, right? You need, if you want to become an entrepreneur, you need all the support. So we need to start celebrating both success and failures because most of the big or very successful entrepreneurs, it's their second, third or fourth venture. In India, we need to get into change that mindset of, because if you start something new, there's a very high chance that it'll fail. Most of the startups are bound to fail, right? But you need to get up and start again. And that requires a mindset change. So that's something which I see because in US, something won't work, failure, you move on and start something else. There's still a big difference in that mindset in India, right? We need to celebrate success and failures because if there are 60,000, 70,000 plus startups, only a few will succeed.
Yeah.
Startups can fail, but entrepreneurs should not fail.
Wow.
Because entrepreneurs, that failure should be a big step towards success sometime in the next or the next to next venture. That requires a mindset change from all of us. We have a habit of pulling down people, but we need to understand that that's not how you create if you really want to challenge, if you want to create India as a startup destination, we need this mindset change.
So what would be the two things or three things a young founder who's watching this should keep in mind when they're raising funds?
Investors don't want to, most of the investors don't want to run the businesses. They know that the founders and the founder mentality is intact. They will be very happy playing a supporting role. Not necessarily a passive role. There are investors who will actively support, but if you are scaling the leadership and if they know that the intent is right, they will. What I have seen is that even in tough times like this, they have been very supportive.
Nice.
There were times when they were anxious. They will be anxious, but once they know that the intent is right, they will be supportive. Because at the end of the day, that's the whole idea is that they will make investments in multiple places and they want
fair
founders or anyone with founder mentality to run the show.
Quick question. What do you feel is the right business?
So for me, that's a simple answer. In terms of, it's not that I'm investing anywhere else. But if you want me to give a hypothetical answer, I want to invest in businesses which will create a long-term impact. Because anything which creates a long-term impact will become successful.
The question of the day is, I want to have this opportunity to ask everyone, how can we get better? What should we, because you spent such 4 hours now with us. What do you think? How can I improve what I'm doing right now?
Very simple. I'm going to repeat what I've told and that's what I want everyone to take. Once figure out, and this message is to everyone, right? Figure out what you like and what you are good at. Forget about others, what others tell. And once you figure that out, and again, time is on your side, whatever be your age, whoever is listening to this, time is on your side. Don't think that you need to reflect and see, learn from the mistakes which you have made. But otherwise, time is on your side. Figure out what you like and what you are good at. And once you figure that out, then no looking back. Go at it with, pursue that with relentlessly with all the passion which you have got. And knowing very well that all of you are far better than what you think you are. And all of you can do a lot more than what you think you can. It's if someone from a small village without any support, if can do all this, I'm just a normal guy with big dreams and a lot of discipline. Anyone can do anything. If I can do this, so can you.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks a lot. I relate to your journey a lot, and I feel there's a long way. You inspire me, man. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Because
thank you.
I come from a small place. I dream big, and I always call myself a dreamer that, hey, you know what? Yeah. I just want to have the next big dream, and then I want to change that. And then it became to a point that now I'm satisfied with what I have. And like the dream is, how can I make more people just like me so that they are not afraid of dreaming? How are they becoming entrepreneurs? How are they doing things? And you just inspire me to make sure that I am thinking 10 times more than what I do right now. Thank you so much for watching this episode till the end. Let me tell you, the story is not ended yet. We have Baiju Ravindra's co-founder and partner in life, Divya Gokulnath, on the podcast coming next week. So make sure that you check out that episode as well. How did these guys meet? What do they do? What are the future plans? How are they going to make sure that they change the education system in the country? And so many more things. And before you close down this episode, please share this episode with at least one person, because I really believe that one idea, one conversation, one right role model can help you, me, our country grow really, really fast, because you never know what idea this spark, and one idea can be turned into a $1 billion opportunity, which can take our country to the growth which we all want to see. Thank you so much. Until the next episode, keep figuring out.